So, thank you for having me. My name is Suzanne Newman. I am presenting today on some lessons that we learned from IMS Learning Design Tool Developments. I will be talking about the presentation will have two parts. First, I'm presenting results of a user test we did with an editor for IMS Learning Design. And the second will be results of an expert workshop on IMS Learning Design we held in November last year. And two of the participants are actually here today, Guy Griffiths and Tom Boyd. So let me start out with the results of the user tests. This is the tool that we tested. This is actually the post-test version. So this already includes the results that we incorporated after the testing. You have a navigation menu here on the left, an instance tree that shows you what is being represented here. We have a workspace where you build your learning design. These are activities, and they are colored in the color of the role that you assign to each activity. And this is your modeling palette where you have different design functions to work with on the workspace. This is how we went forward with the testing. We gave a 10-minute live presentation or a 3-minute flash film demonstration of the main functions. 21 instructors from our university came to the testing, and they each designed two designs, a prescribed design and a design from their own teaching context. The prescribed design was a narrative that we had formulated on a one-page piece of paper that they had there, and they had to transfer the narrative into the software. And the design from their own teaching context, they could just choose whatever one of their courses to represent. They kept the protocol on all questions that they had while they were designing, and they also had to tick off whether they could resolve the question themselves or not. And at the end, they filled in a structured feedback form, excuse me, and answered 3 open-ended questions. This is one of the results that we attained. Of the prescribed design, 81% of our instructors were able to produce a design that is export ready, which means it has all elements in it to make a unit of learning that is IMS Learning Design conform. The rate was lower for their own designs, showing that it's a little bit more difficult to transfer maybe concepts from my own context into the software. The other bar here is the designs that were actually exported, but this was not part of the task. Like, this would mean they actually graded the unit of learning, but since we had no learning management system into which to put the units of learning, this was not required. Some of the positive outcomes of this evaluation were that of the 40 learning designs that our test users created, 37 were complete. These were the ones contained in this figure, or nearly complete, which means that only a minimal element, like a connection between two activities, was missing. We consider this to be a great success, especially considering the minimal time that we took to introduce the software. Our instructors used extensively the functions contained in the software. They from all over the place, they used the functions. And especially, we are very proud that they used a lot of level B functions, which are advanced functions, very hard to understand, very technical. And we did not explain these during the demonstration, and nevertheless, they went ahead and used them in their own designs. The structured feedback showed that the usability of the graphical learning model was really good. We received mostly positive values, as you can see here. This is the overview, a little bit more detail. So most of the values fall into this positive category up here in the upper scale. You see some design functions that you can do with the software up here, and we ask them to rate how well they could go along with them. To identify some problems, users had big problems with the level B functionalities. Even though they applied them, they had a hard time using them. The way we had set them up, they didn't feel that was intuitive enough. So that was something we changed, actually, in the version afterwards. And the confidence in regard to using the software was sort of borderline. So might also be attributed to them using the software for the first time. Some of the positively rated functions that are close to going into the negative part and have a tendency towards the negative part are the environments, the transfer of own concepts into software, and the unit of learning creation, user guidance. With the environments in IMS Learning Design hold learning objects and learning services like forums and chats and so forth. And our instructors confuse the environment with the learning management system where the unit of learning will be placed. So, and they were kind of taken aback by the fact that you have to give titles for everything, title for the environment, title for the learning object, title for the resource that holds the learning object. It was just, to them, really cumbersome. So they had problems with transferring their own designs and some usability factors in the unit of learning creation. We had some messages on where they have to add additional things to be for the unit of learning to be exported, and they didn't really feel that this was enough to help them, guide them in the process. So I have visualized here another problem that they had. You see the GLM up here. I have also placed a screenshot of the recourse tool, another editing environment for IMS Learning Design units of learning. And the problem is, if you export a unit of learning, you package it into a zip package, and then you transfer it over into the learning management system, you have a totally different representation. So in our tool, you have this representation. In the recourse tool, you have this representation. And then it looks like that in Grail, which is an add-on to the .learn learning management system. And our instructors found that really difficult because they, first of all, when you are in this environment, you don't have any idea about what it's going to look like here. And if you export it to different learning management systems, it even looks different every time. So this was hard for them to grasp and understand. Some of the free answers that our instructors gave to the question, to what extent can you imagine an integration of the GLM in your teaching practice, more than half said they don't see any added value, which is tough, but to them it was extra work and they didn't quite see how they could be supported because the learning management system of the University of Vienna doesn't support IMS Learning Design, but they can't even use the units of learning in our system, even though they said that would be nice to have. So if the connection was actually there, they thought, oh, if the system then sets up every chat, every form for me, and I don't have to do it, that is really nice. That would be a nice feature to have. Although almost half of them said it might be, it is useful for planning courses, and this is something that they said themselves. So this is a positive aspect for visualizing and planning. The whole strand that we were discussing yesterday, the Pedagogical Planner Summit, this might provide little proof that this is good at what we're doing. To summarize, I have only listed here the problems that do not relate to the usability of our software that we design. The instructors want to see what they build. They want to see their design and the learning management system. They don't deal well with being in an abstract authoring environment. Our instructors confuse the environment with the learning management system. And we found that our instructors think in different terms than what the IMS Learning Design specification puts forward. So they think in terms of semesters and sessions instead of activities. And they think of actual persons and learner groups instead of roles. They had a really difficult time with the role concept, which was apparent because they named roles, they named their roles I, well, Barbara. So they think of specific persons and not the role that the person takes. During this whole time, we were in contact with different IMS Learning Design experts from other European projects. And we then had the idea that maybe we could bring them all together and talk about the problems that we have encountered in developing IMS Learning Design tools. So we called together an IMS Learning Design expert workshop This was in November 2008. We had 13 experts of past and present, I'm assuming design-related projects. They created a vision of the future of I'm assuming design. They identified 5 main problems of working with I'm assuming design. And they wrote a report, which is to be published for in the finishing stages of bringing it together. And Sheila will be our reviewer, peer reviewer. This is a poster from the brainstorming session with all the problems. Might be a little hard to read. 5 main problems occurred. We have the life cycle problem, which regards the separation of the editor environment and the runtime environment that I was just talking about before, and the sort of the path that the unit of learning has to take between these two environments. We have the adoption problem that regards how do we bring I'm assuming design into institutions? How do we overcome the barrier of the big technical setup that you have to put up before an institution can implement this? What are the key benefits? We have the interoperability problem. How does I'm assuming design relate to other e-learning standards? How do they work together? Can we make them work together? We have the level B notation problem, advanced functions. How do we represent them in a user interface? How do we visualize them? How do we get learning designers to easily see where these are being used? And last but not least, the usability and futility function. How do instructors and learners go about using I'm assuming design? The experts then voted on which problems they wanted to work on, and 2 of them then appeared to be the ones that were of most interest, which were the life cycle problem and the usability and futility problem. We split the group into 3 groups, and 2 of them worked on the usability and utility, and 1 of them worked on the life cycle. And I'm going to present you now some of the results that came out of these 3 groups. So first was the life cycle group, which comprised Francis Bruns, Petra Oberhuemer, Hans Hummel, and Luis de la Fuente Valentin. The problems that they have specifically identified for this group were the problem of flexibility, how to deal with changes of a unit of learning while the course is running, because once you instantiate the unit of learning, it's there, it's fixed, and you can't really do anything with it. The versioning problem. Each change in a course that you made is actually a new version. How do you deal with that and connecting them? And the problem of proprietary tools. Most authoring tools cannot import compliant units of learning if they are not created with the same software. This is usually due to the graphical representation, because the graphical data is contained within the unit of learning package, and only the software can interpret it that actually build it. So we're not really going with the compliance that was put forth by the specification. The solution that this group proposed was to have a 2-layer model to work with. And this 2-layer model is consists of the runtime system and the editor. The editor contains generic templates in I'm assuming design, and the runtime system is where these templates are being played out. And they see sort of a wiki, this is put in quotation marks because it's just supposed to introduce the function that this might serve. A wiki is supposed to connect these two so that user information that is gathered during runtime is constantly fed into the editor via the wiki, and the updated templates, the results that come from this user information where people had problems and where things need to be adjusted, are then updated and fed back into the runtime system to create a more dynamic and flexible approach in these 2 separated environments that we're working with. The second group is the first group of utility and usability, of which the members were Michael Klebel, Michele Dicciato, Nils Fatin, and Michael Dörntle. And the problems that they identified was the lack of usability, that I'm assuming design tools do not reflect the practice of teachers and learners, and the lack of dissemination, that the results of IMA's learning design developments and the achievements are not communicated. And they see as a solution a research program to enhance the professional development of teachers. They want to focus on the educator's proficiency, cognition, and actions related to IMA's learning design. And the representation of learning designs, which we have also seen today in Brian's presentation, how do we visualize what's going on in the unit of learning? Is it a timeline based? Is it a pedagogy view? Or maybe alternative views that we haven't even thought of yet. So they feel that this is an area that needs more consideration. And they want to do a marketing campaign across all of Europe and the entire world, showing the benefits of IMS learning design, you know, printing t-shirts. I'm
compliant.
That's the one.
Okay. And the second group for utility and usability was a group of Davinia Hernandez-Leo, Dai Griffiths, Tom Boyle, and Amir Vazim. They identified a lack of consistency, that the representations of teachers' designs are not consistent with the representations of learners' designs. And again, here the difference between the authoring view and the user view. So they have sketched out this process where the teacher starts out with an idea or an intent for teaching, undergoes this authoring process, creates the unit of learning, which is then orchestrated, played out with the learners. So the teacher, I'm sorry, the unit of learning, of course, represents the idea and the intent. The teacher sees both. Sees the orchestration, sees the idea, and sees the idea reflected in the orchestration. But the learners, they see the orchestration, they are taking part in the orchestration, but they don't see the teacher's idea and intent. And to overcome this, the group suggested that you use an intelligent parsing, where you join the teacher's design and the learner's choice within the orchestration. Please don't ask me about technical details, because this is future, the future of IMS learning design. But the goal is to bring the two together in the orchestration where, of course, the teacher role and the learner role meet. So this might have sounded a little bit negative. Of course, the vision for IMS learning design, I don't want to hide from you. So our experts saw that there is added value for IMS learning design in the next 10 years. We have IMS learning design represented in learning management systems, but not only. We do IMS learning design for the learner and by the learner. It is supposed to be flexible, large-scale implementations with user-friendly tools and money, 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 money. So get on the train. What our lessons learned, to sum up. Allowing IMS learning design to be opened up, coming back to the conference theme, you have to focus on the target beneficiaries, learners and instructors. Start the other way around. Work from the instructors and the learners' perspectives rather than the technical perspective. As much as possible, use their language and concepts. Don't try to push the language that they have introduced onto the users. Emphasize how instructors and learners benefit from being IMS learning design compliant, and make the tools more flexible and easy to use. Right now they're really rigid. We need to bring together editor and runtime environments. The separation is really difficult. You have to allow changes on the fly, because once you implement something, you see what's not right, what you didn't orchestrate right during your design. So you have to be so flexible to allow these changes on the fly. And last but not least, you have to offer manifold tool support with repositories. This is an idea that we had, that if you have these learning designs, you should have several options of what you can do with them. So have the tools connected to the repositories so that the instructors then have a choice how to proceed with them. Thank you very much, and I'll answer any questions you might have.
Ha ha.
comment on, you know, what I say at the unit as much as anything else.
Should I go back to the slide?
No, you didn't. My comment is that when I'm looking back on this and when I look at the presentation, we're always talking about MSLD as if it were the complete solution. You know, that it is the describes the whole thing. And that's partly because that's how it was presented originally. It was described as a notation for the whole of the educational process. You'd be able to notate it, look at it. That's the whole process. But actually, for the tools, I'm wondering whether that's actually the best way to go. And I'm going forward a bit to what I'll be saying this afternoon, but I wonder whether actually it would be more useful to say, okay, lots of the things that we do are informal. Lots of the things that people do, that teachers do, are. I'll give my learners a link and ask them to look at it and write something. And nobody is going to go through a design process to say, I'm going to give my learners a link. And, you know, and because we're trying to capture the whole thing, we're saying, look, in order to give your learners a link and ask them to write a report on it, you have to set up roles, do all this stuff. And that seems a bit unwise to me. I wonder whether actually we're looking at the future where the MSLD does the stuff it does really well, which is roles and provisioning and different, you know, the orchestration, all that stuff, has one of many services that you would find in a learning management system, which is bigger than that. So that one of the tags which said in the LMS, in the learning management system, but not being the LMS, I think that's a critical thing. So that's just my response now. 6 months down the line, that seems to be the big issue. How do you contextualise this in a bigger system?
Thank you for that.
When you say that the structural designer and design activity, have they tried with the students or the university of the design?
Have the students actually designed?
Yeah. No, like tried them, like as learners.
During the testing that we did,
yeah.
No. This was just concerning the authoring phase. But I know that other institutions have actually created units of learning that were used with learners. The Open University of the Netherlands has done this, and
Ten Competence is doing quite a lot. The project I'm working on,
Davinia
Hernandez.
Yeah.
She's working on the pilots, and they're doing quite a lot.
Yeah, because I always see it like from the point of view of the designer or the instructor, but I never see the point of view of the student. What do they think of this? Or if they like it or not?
The students don't see the technical architecture behind. They see the learning management system and probably more the functions of the learning management system. I'm not sure that they're so concerned with the technical setup, but the instructor shouldn't be either. So I don't have any results to present on that. Yeah. I know that from Michael Klebel, who also attended the expert workshop, that he mentioned he has done some studies on giving units of learning to his students, and he identified some things that they have problems with, like the separation of the environment and the activity was something that learners didn't necessarily easily understand.
They shouldn't.
Why is that separate? To them, it's the same. You know, I have to do something with this. Why isn't it in the same place? So things like that.
Yeah, because I haven't done with this, but he asked. The students sometimes feel that they lack of freedom. And then say, why do you have to do things in order? Because you have to. And I don't know.
Why do they have to?
Do things in order. Like, it's
sequential.
Yeah, but
well,
they keep like...
That's what I mean. You have to do them in order.
Yeah, that's
because it's planned. That's the plan. That's why you have to do it. If you don't want people to have to do that, then you don't plan it. Mm-hmm. It's a very strange loop.
That's too big a job.
It's a very strange loop to say we should plan this thing which is not planned and then implement it and then enable people to adjust the not planned. You get kind of spiralling out of control.
But you can plan for flexible. So
you can, yes. You can give people, you can say, here's a set of tools for you to choose from.
You probably can go a little bit beyond that. I mean, there's a classic distinction in computing between sort of procedural and declarative. The classic computing languages were procedural. You give a set of instructions to the computer. And then they discovered the actual power in making much more declarative.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, I found out that years ago when I used a language called Prolog. And in Prolog, for example, if you're doing a parser of the language, you don't write a set of instructions. You write a little grammar. And the actual underlying it is sort of procedural. It's actually a logic-based procedural mechanism. It just searches it. So when you're writing the program, you're not saying, do this, this, and this. You're saying, this is my best description, in this case, of the grammar. And the system could go through it very flexibly. And put it another way in terms of learning. You could design a room with doors and tables and all the rest. And you might actually design it to be optimal for a certain purpose, but you aren't actually designing down to the procedural details, and you have to do this in this order. And you know, there's a lot we can learn about comparing design there, I think. You can. Give another example. We developed a system 20 years ago for learning programming. And one of the things you could do was you could click on a fragment of code. And in those days, it actually had to put it in a proper working program. Now, we had the problem of where do you put this? And we solved that problem by putting it everywhere. Every time you had a fragment of code, you could do that. No. So we didn't specify. We actually put it in where we thought the learner would probably never use it. But no, they could if they wanted. No, we left them the freedom as to when they wanted to click in a fragment of code and load it in or not. And you know, we need to think in terms of that. I think the other big thing which worries me a lot is, are we still talking about design for teaching instead of design for learning? And you know, there is a, if you go back to the teacher's model, how does the teacher know that model is a good one? You can actually produce, going back to what James said about pedagogy and neutrality, you can produce absolutely appallingly bad learning experiences, which are IMSLD compliant. And that does worry me. You know, it's, but maybe we need to separate off the different levels in which you're dealing with things. Are you using notation to capture something? In which case, going back to the musical example again, you can have beautiful songs, you can actually jarring, discordant, rubbish songs. You know, same notation will represent both.
Yes?
I think that's a lovely suggestion as well. Just something is IMSLD compliant or anything compliant, that doesn't mean it abuse them in any kind of way. I think you have to be very wary of using the standard in that kind of way. That if you do something that is compliant, that is good because that's not the case. And you know, you can have any teaching resource. Someone could take something that we might all collectively agree that it's not a thing, and say that book, I'm just thinking something, the poster at that layout, that poster is a bit rubbish, and it's terrible, but you can actually use that for a really good teaching and learning experience. So there's different, I think we have to be very, very careful about our value judgments and how we decide things are good. And we can't do that just through standards, and that's where the community comes in and collects knowledge.
Just to reply that I think there's an implicit value judgment built into the name of learning design. It's actually assuming there's going to be learning at the end. And it isn't actually about the learner. It's about its instructional design. And the choice of words. If it was instructional design, that makes it clear. You know, you design a certain instructional thing and then you have to work out, you know, does it work effectively with this group of learners. But the choice of name actually leads to unnecessary confusion.
I agree.
Thank you, Suzanne.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Our next speaker is Spiros. Spiros has done a pretty amazing thing because as a